Jema. So today we take up two subjects. One is about the human personality and the second is about dealing with pain. Why understanding human personality is important is because Sri Aurobindo has given us a very wonderful, I won't use the word paradigm, but how the human personality operates. Because if we understand that, then most of the things in our life will be clear. For example, we see and judge human beings based on their outer reactions, their behavior, how they are outwardly, how they respond, react. But this is only an outermost layer. This doesn't say anything about what the person is within. For example, one example which I give, not much to my best of liking, but for example, Karela, bitter gourd. So if you go by its outer personality, it's neither good in terms of looking at it, because it's very rough outer surface. And if you go by the taste, it's quite bitter. But deep inside, the mother has given it the name sweetness. So it has a capacity to heal. I believe that, you know, blood sugar can come down and things like that. So also in human beings, we see at least there are three layers. Just like we can take the example of bitter gourd or anything for that matter. There is an external outer man, outer which constitutes of your behavior, conditioning, heredity, habits you have picked up, society in which you have grown up. So it's largely that makes an outer person. For instance, the way you dress up. See, people can get so much carried away just by the color of the skin, what car you are getting down from, what is the dress you are wearing, how polished English you may speak. Sometime back, someone had written a strange letter that, you know, if a person can speak good language, letter was slightly different, but more or less with the same import. So it means that the person has then we can consider that the person has a spiritual capacity. Now this is so stupid on the face of it, because I gave him the example of Sri Ramakrishna Paramahans. I said, are you going to challenge his spiritual capacity because his language could be, or in many other yogis, their language, their outer behavior could be very uncouth. Even Devra Baba would sometimes kick a person with the leg and people would take it as his blessing. He used to throw stones when people came near him because he didn't want to encourage it. So this outer personality or what is called as behaviorism is towards surface eye, that's what matters. Not that it should not be good or beautiful or in keeping with the inner, but that's a different subject altogether. But it is a formation of atavistic habits. People pick it up in an environment. If you go to, for instance, go abroad to any Western country. So if you believe that speaking English is a sign of superiority, then you'll be in for strange encounters. For example, there are people who speak good English in English-speaking countries. But they may not have even a basic capacity to think properly, to think with clarity, because it doesn't automatically translate. But you may be impressed. But equally, there are people who may not speak any other language except their own. Russians are, for example, you can't converse with them. I mean, ordinarily, they won't even speak to you. They are more comfortable in Russian. When I go to Spain, they know mainly Spanish. But wonderful people. So outer personality is one thing which is constructed by outer forces. And hence, we have to understand it has a very limited place in the overall scheme of things. Then behind this layer, there is the inner being. So inner being is full of all kinds of forces. It's open to universal currents. So outer personality is like, you know, you're on a ghat and the water which is coming there. But the inner being is like, if you go a little more deeper into this ocean or the river, then you see the currents are coming from different directions and you have a different feel of the water altogether. So inner being is our thoughts, feelings, the inner world of man, his subjective side, which actually gives the true value to a human being. And looking at the outer personality, there is no way you can know. Very rarely, most of the time, there are people who are very impressed by the outer or equally repulsed by the outer. But the inner being of a person is that true person, the real man, as Sri Aurobindo says. And that's where you have to, either through long association or, you know, if you share the thoughts, feelings, very close observation, you may get some hint of what is going on inside. If the person writes, then through the writings you can get to know. So that is the inner being of man. But behind it, the secret determining power is the secret soul. So if the soul is asleep, just to give an example, then however polished a person may be outside, and even his inner being may have been shaped by, being shaped by good universal current, yet the value will not be as much as of a person whose soul is awake, because it's a different category altogether. So that's why sometimes we don't understand the ways of the divine, for example, not only in the ashram but several other places. People wonder, how come such a person is in the ashram or in a, you know, in a spiritual monastery or some place. If you look closely, you will see that there is deep within some kind of an aspiration, some kind of a faith. This core is basically the faith and the aspiration of a person. And there is no way you can access it. Even accessing the inner being is very difficult. And this core has little to do, even as I said, living in a ashram or living in a monastery or leading a worldly life. A person may be leading a worldly life, but his core may be entirely faith and aspiration, may be moving toward the divine, which is something wonderful. Or he may be carrying in oneself the idea that the world should become a better place, a happier place. Or he may be doing everything that one does outwardly, let's say, two daughter-in-laws who are caring for their mother-in-law. One may do it with the idea that, well, heavy burden and, you know, or with eyeing on the money. Whereas another may do it actually with the idea of seva, service. So they are two different categories altogether. And unless we have some way of accessing the inmost being, the secret soul, its aspiration and faith, we cannot really know what the person is. The Gita says a man is his faith. And so when you see Sri Aurobindo and the mother, how they would pick up certain people. So they would see that, what is going on inside. For example, why was the Gita given to Arjun and not to Yudhishthir, to Bhishma, to several other people, Vidur, who were outwardly more qualified. So that's where the core of a human being is important. And since if we don't know it, then really we don't know anything about the person. We know only some superficial actions and reactions, some habit, conditioning. So this is the aspect of human personality, one aspect that we can understand it layer by layer from surface to the depths. Then you can also see the human personality in its evolutionary aspect, which adds a totally new understanding to it. For instance, a person may be completely rooted, identified with the physical consciousness, with the physical body. He may be busy with the physical body, he thinks about the physical body, wants to preserve the physical body, wants to look good, you know, in various ways, you know, he is basically absorbed with the physical body. This one kind of humanity. Then the next layer is the psychological. So with evolution now, a thinking human being begins to develop, who is less preoccupied with the outer and more preoccupied with the inner. That is the sign of a thinking person. He doesn't act purely as a reaction to outer things, and he begins to develop an inner thoughts, discernment, or a kind of intellect which chooses, he begins to make choices. So there is the psychological apparatus which is evolving. Now this evolution is a long journey. It starts with the imaginative person, creative person, to thinking man, rational man, and then it goes still further. So this is the second layer. And the third layer, which is still developing, is the spiritual evolution, which is going on. So again, why this is important is because if you see a person who is identified with the physical, and if you see a person who is spiritually evolved and has a physical problem in which one is looking at the physical or engaged with the physical, they are two very different things. One of the instances which I may explain is that, and Mother speaks of it, all this is in the light of Mother and Sri Aurobindo, that there is something called as a shadow or a defect in a human being. Now, one may say, well, it's a shadow within me. So, what about those who are outrightly evil, wicked? So, they can also say that it's my shadow. No, shadow is only when the light begins to develop. So, there are people who are in the very early preliminary or primitive stages of evolution who are identified with the body, bodily self, or with the vital desire. So, we can't say that this is their shadow. They are in the shadow. They are in the darkness, walking in the darkness. Now, when a person evolves, it's not that these things leave the person, but they start getting modified. So, as the mind develops, the shadow gets modified. It is given nice coloring, or there is some degree of, let's say, humanization of the shadow, which is shadow is the past, which is dragging behind us, the past tendencies, the animal stage from which we are evolving, anger, for example, lust, for example. So, these are the shadows which human beings ordinarily live. But as one evolves, they go into the background or they take a human you. Now what happens when a spiritual person, evolution takes place? Again the shadow is there. It's not gone, but it begins to modify itself. So if a spiritual person feels afraid, he speaks about, trust in the divine, should offer it to God. And he deals with it very differently than a person who is not evolving spiritually or not yet, the evolution has not yet begun. And there would be any number of combinations in that. Now, as the evolution takes place, all experiences of life begin to change their value. For example, to a physical man, death is the last reality. Mother was asked once that, Mother, you have said that faith is so important. Then why do we have filters in the ashram? Why don't we just live by faith? That why do we need to worry about bacteria, viruses? People ask this question also. That you people talk about faith, but you have a filter in the ashram. You have a nursing home. You have medicines. Now, Mother gave a very interesting reply. Is there in 54 conversations. She says, you know, my child, how many of you can really say that you are not living in your physical consciousness? She says, majority are still living in the physical consciousness. They are afraid of death. They are, they should not be. That's, he says that they should not be. That's a different thing altogether. Because now if the spiritual evolution has just begun, this will not leave so easily. She says, but if it has gone beyond a point, say if you have discovered your soul, there will be obviously no fear. So he says, because most of you still live by fear. It cannot be just an intellectual theory that, I don't need anything. I am fine, I can drink any water and survive. Well, you will, but provided you have that kind of faith. But if you have fear, you are going to die. And this faith, there are people who instinctively have it. So that's a different story altogether. But as we evolve, this shadow drags us beyond, it doesn't let us go beyond a point. You want to cultivate faith, you want to cultivate aspiration. If in your past you were a person who used to doubt, analyze too much, look at cause and effect, this is going to come back. For example, you will experience something in life and the doubt will come in. Why this has happened? So how can this doubt go? Not by strengthening the shadow, but by increasing the light. So people often end up analyzing or giving some kind of a theoretical explanation, like sometimes they say, oh, divine is punishing the person. No, that's not the case. Basically, when we increase the light and the aspiration, aspiration is the fire which gives the light, then we'll begin to understand why things are the way they are. Otherwise, the shadow will keep on haunting, keep on dragging us back. It's the whole past. In Savitri, it's the whole dialogue between death and Savitri. So you'll see people continuing to have disbelief in what Mother and Sri Aurobindo have brought, or even in basic, that is there really a God, and yet, they've nascent spiritual evolution has started. something in them, deep within, has begun to determine, but it's going to take a long journey. So at every level, there would be several stages of the journey. That's how evolution proceeds. But it is inevitable, because once the spiritual evolution has begun, you will end up. And you have to only hasten that process and deal with these accordingly with the new vision. Mother uses the word reversal of consciousness. So at each level, you look at the same thing differently. For example, generally in the early stages of evolution, we have a tendency to blame others for what is happening in our life. Then as you evolve, you begin to say that, well, it's not the person who has to be blamed. Even it's not that you have to be blamed, but you have to look at it objectively and understand that, well, what is the movement? You have to understand the exact movement, and then you are empowered to heal it, cure it, correct it, whatever it is. So again, the same thing, you have looked at it very differently. So we can look at it physically, we can look at it psychologically, and we can look at it spiritually. So this is the basic structure of human personality, horizontally and vertically. And vertical is about evolution, horizontal is about things as they are today. But they will change. So as the higher evolution takes place, just as a person who lived in the village, his outer personality, his language was of one kind, which is the outer personality, he undergoes a change when he goes out and studies in a city, and then he comes back. He's a little more polished, apparently. Nowadays, it's worse, because a lot of things people pick up. So, but anyways, he goes out, he develops. It's in certain social niceties come in. It's the necessity of their life. So they develop that, and when they come back, they are a little more polished. Now, this is not a transformation, but this is a change which takes place as we evolve. Transformation is when there is a genuine and radical alteration. So transformation is a process where the outer has become incapable of those movements which were there in the past. To take an example, a person gets very polished when he goes into, let's say, a city. He learns to speak a good language. He develops good manners, please step in and all that. And people may get very impressed. But deep inside, he's the same uncouth fellow. You will see, when you have time to observe closely, you will see he's the same person. His inner being is the same, sometimes worse, because he has learned to deceive. One of the things that the mind, as it develops is the capacity to deceive. So outwardly, things will be very polished, very nicely. This sometimes people don't understand, even in the ashram context, because they are expecting social niceties. That when people come, for instance, enter the ashram, they'll say, please come, and it's so nice. And these are learned behaviors. In certain places, people do this only because they want to welcome more people in their fold. And people get very impressed. And we know how people can be fooled in this way. Many people who joined ISIS, now we have genuine stories, how the Maulanas literally fooled them by saying very high things, philosophical things, but later on, they were just made fodder for the jihad. So, those who are looking only for external things will never understand a true spiritual events that are going on inside. We know the story of the person who came here and just saw the painting of Ajanta Ellora, which are amazing paintings, which are frescoes and, well, also the stone carvings. People don't understand. But when you look at it from the spiritual consciousness, it's all very clear. Psychologically, you try to explain it. Physically, somebody would say it is nudity, vulgarity, and see what kind of thought. Many of them are Buddhist paintings. So, but when you look at it from the deeper perspective, it's so evident what is what. Now, that's a different subject, so we are not touching upon it. So, as we grow and evolve, there is a reversal of consciousness. So, if you really want to understand this world better, and to change things within us and outside, we have to understand this evolutionary process, and we have to consciously undertake it. We can't remain where we are static and try to understand what's happening in, anybody for that matter, any situation. Least of all in somebody who is evolving, because you really don't know, you have no access to that. So the only way is evolve. If you evolve, you will understand. The more you evolve, the more you will understand. That's why it is said that to understand the ways of the divine, you have to become one with the divine. Even if you go closer, you will begin to understand. But if you remain where you are and you judge and doubt and analyze, you will never understand the ways of the divine, because that consciousness is very, very different. Its seeing, its vision is very different. We read the other day in Savitri, above the world creator stand, in the phenomenon, see its mystic source. So to understand anything, we need to grow. And that's why the urgency of spiritual evolution, because it will set right a lot of disorder which is taking place in the world. Just to give one example with which we'll close. Somebody came, as the story goes, it goes with many mystics, they look at life very differently. So someone went and accused the Buddha of something, or even probably insulted him. Buddha just smiled, remained quiet. He went away. The night he started feeling very unhappy about it. So he came next day and said, I am so sorry that, you know, I said this to you. Buddha said, what? Who? He said, no, I am the one who insulted you. So Buddha said, no, see, nobody can insult you if you are not ready to take in. But there are people who hold it as a knot. I have seen for years. I met people for years. And these people who keep these things inside as a knot suffer so much. Nobody else suffers. You are the one who is suffering. Something has happened. Somebody has told you something. It has hurt you, let us say. Now you have a choice. If the sign of an evolved person is he sees the thing in totality and opens the knot and comes out of it, and everything is harmonious because the spiritual person is able to do it. Or he may even see certain things, defects of others, with compassion, genuine compassion. But if you are not in that state, you end up fighting, holding grudge, and that grudge can trouble you. Grudgeitis is a very bad disease. It gives rise to many diseases and creates so much disorder, quarrel. Imagine unhappiness. All your life you are carrying a grudge. And what is worse is you have to live with that person. How can you live with a person all your life if you are carrying a grudge? But that's how it is. So, but as you grow up, you begin to see the things. So remedy for everything is spiritual evolution, to hasten the spiritual evolution. The place where we are standing, we don't have a perfect understanding and we don't have the perfect answer or the even a near complete solution. Not even that. So evolve, evolve, evolve. And evolve both. Go into the deeper self and toward the heightening of consciousness, deepening, heightening, widening. And then everything will automatically begin to set right. Jai Ma.